This is Case Closed, crime stories from the golden age of radio. Welcome back to Case Closed. I got another 60 minutes of crime fighting for you this Wednesday, as we do every Wednesday here on Relic Radio. We're going to start off this week with Richard Diamond, private detective in the Dixon case, his story from March 14th, 1952. After that, it's Let George Do It and No Way Out, his story from October 1st, 1951.
The makers of Camel cigarettes present Dick Powell as Richard Diamond, private detective. Here's a question that was asked of 113,597 doctors in a nationwide survey a few years ago.
What cigarette do you smoke, doctor?
The brand named most was Camel.
Again and again since then, a cross-section of America's doctors has been asked that same question.
And again, every time, the brand named most has been Camel.
Yes, according to repeated surveys, more doctors smoke Camels than any other cigarette.
Now we bring you another transcribed adventure with Richard Diamond, private detective, starring Dick Powell.
Diamond Detective Agency. Our fee deductible on next year's income tax. Richard Diamond, private deduction speaking.
I beg your pardon.
Sorry, it's much too wordy to go over again.
Yes. Mr. Diamond, this is Fred Lane speaking. You once did a job for a friend of mine.
Well, if your friend wants his money back, tell him I've already spent it.
Oh, no, nothing like that. He recommended you.
Well, wonders never cease.
I'd like to hire you, Mr. Diamond. May I inquire as to your fee?
You may. $100 a day in expenses.
Well, that is rather steep, but I think I can manage.
Spoken like a true millionaire, Mr. Lane.
I live at 1482 Riverside. Please get here as soon as possible.
Well, I'm pretty busy, but I'll try to.
Please do, Mr. Diamond. I'll have a check waiting for you.
Mr. Lane, go to your front door. I'm there. People who promise to have checks waiting are people for whom Diamond loves to work. I went downstairs, picked up my car, and drove to the address on Riverside. Rang the doorbell, the door opened. Then my blood pressure started doing push-ups. She was tall, blonde, and wore a dress that would have even been banned on television.
You must be Mr. Diamond.
Well, how can you tell? Don't other men drool?
Come in, please. Fred's expecting you.
Fred?
Mr. Lane, my husband.
Oh.
This way, please. Fred's in the den. I do hope you'll be able to help us, Mr. Diamond.
Well, so do I. Mrs. Lane, what seems to be the trouble?
I'll let Fred explain to you. This whole business has got me rather upset. It's in here. Fred?
Yes?
Mr. Diamond's here.
Oh, good. Come in, Diamond. Come in.
I'll be upstairs, Fred.
Of course, dear. Sit down, Mr. Diamond.
Thank you.
Well, you got here in a hurry. You're certainly true to your word, sir.
Well, I owe it all to my Boy Scout training.
Well, here is our promised check.
Good, good. Now that we're both men of our word, let's make with some more words. Why do you want to hire me, Mr. Lane?
It's about my wife, Mary. She's being blackmailed, Mr. Diamond.
Oh, I see.
It's been going on for a month now. Finally, last night she broke down and told me all about it.
All about what, Mr. Lane? Why is she being blackmailed?
She made a few mistakes before I met her. No reason to go into that now, but the blackmailer knows all about those mistakes.
You speak as if you knew who the blackmailer was, Mr. Lane.
I do. Perhaps I should clarify that a bit, however. I don't know the man personally, but Mary tells me he was a classmate of hers during her college years.
Mm-hmm.
She told me his name was Louis Dixon, that he was staying at the Brewster Hotel on 35th. I went there this morning to have it out with him.
And?
He checked out last night.
Huh. Mr. Lane, I still don't see why you hired me. Now that your wife's told you about the blackmail, you could just report it to the police. Next time this Dixon guy calls, they'd nab him.
I'm not interested in turning him over to the police, Mr. Diamond.
I don't quite follow you.
I'm only interested in seeing that he doesn't bother Mary anymore. When you locate Dixon, let me know. I intend to give him a thrashing he'll never forget.
That's letting a blackmailer off pretty easy, Lane.
Perhaps, but if we prosecute, well, publicity and all, I think Mary's gone through enough. Like I say, all I'm interested in seeing that he doesn't bother her anymore. Call me about 5 and let me know what progress you made. Good day, Mr. Diamond, and good luck.
And that was that. Go find a blackmailer, Diamond, so your client can beat him up.
Screwy?
You bet. But the $100 check in my pocket made up for my own feelings on the case, and I set out to find one Louis Dixon, blackmailer. Lane seemed to think Dixon would have a record, and if he was right, Lieutenant Walt Levinson could give me a lead. It was almost noon when I parked in front of the 5th Precinct and walked into Walt's office.
Well, oh, Ricky boy, pull up a chair. Just in time to watch me finish my lunch.
Oh, you are so generous, Walter. No thanks.
No thanks what?
No thanks. I won't have a piece of your pie.
What's wrong with this pie? My wife made it.
That's what's wrong.
You insinuating my wife's a bad cook?
Of course not. She just makes fattening pies. They're too doughy for
me. How do you know it's too doughy before you taste it?
You can tell by looking at it.
That's ridiculous. Here, now let me cut this piece in two. There. Now try it.
Oh, Walter.
Go on, try it.
Well... Mm.
Yeah. Is it doughy?
Not in the least.
I guess that proves you. Wait a minute.
Something wrong, Fatty?
You've eaten my wife's pies at the house before. You never thought they were dough.
Pour me some coffee, please, Lieutenant.
You know, I should book you for swindling. What do you want down here, anyway?
Oh, just a little peek at your files.
Who is it you're looking for this time?
Guy by the name of Louis Dixon. Ever hear of him?
Dixon? No, Ralph Dixon, a pickpocket. Herbie Dixon, a con man. Well, I can't place a Louis Dixon offhand. What's his racket?
Blackmail lately.
Oh, charming. Why haven't we been called in on the case?
My client doesn't want publicity. Besides, he just wants to poke the guy in the snoot a few times and tell him he's been a bad boy.
What?
Yeah, that's right. Finish what's left of your pie while I go through the files. And, Walt.
Yeah?
Have your wife bake lemon meringue next time, huh?
Oh.
I checked the files. There was nothing on Louis Dixon. I thanked Walt, went to my car, and drove across town to a little bar called the Bat's Cave. The Bat's Cave was as dingy as the name implied, but I didn't go there for entertainment. I was looking for Rabbit Jones, a guy who knew more about the underworld than Rudolph Halley. Like most informers, Rabbit Jones was a mean, whining character, and he didn't like me any more than I liked him. But he did like my money, and I liked his information. It was always a fair trade. I found him in the last booth, nursing a half-filled glass of beer. Ah, hello, Rabbit. Well, now that's a cheerful greeting. You must have won a horse race today, or weren't you running?
Big joke. Ha-ha. Beer.
Oh, Rabbit, you spread sunshine wherever you go, don't you?
Who asked you to sit down? Oh, Diamond, I get sick of you private dicks. Go bother someone else.
Oh, drop the small talk, Rabbit. I won't pay over the usual price, so don't make your information hard to get.
Maybe I got none to sell.
Pal, the day you stop selling information, I start knitting argyles.
Okay. Who is it?
Louis Dixon.
Where's the dough?
You know I always pay.
Well, this ain't my week for trusting people. Fork it over.
Suit yourself. There. Now about Louis Dixon.
Never heard of him. Let go of me.
Don't get smart, Rabbit. I pay for talk, straight talk.
Okay. Take your hands off of me.
Hi there.
You rough boys got to show your muscles, huh?
Oh, shut up. You don't get my money unless you earn it, Rabbit, so start earning.
Yeah. Like I say, I never heard of a guy named Louis Dixon. But you know, with my contacts, I can find out about him, so drop the rough stuff.
How long will it take?
Well, that all depends. What's this Dixon guy's line?
Blackmail. There's a chance he might have been mixed up in some other rackets the past few years.
Give me 2 hours. If he's been around lately, I'll find out.
Now make it 1 hour. I'll meet you back here.
Okay. Hey, Diamond.
Yeah?
I wish I had more nerve. If I had more nerve, I'd slip a shiv in you some night.
Oh, I wish you had more nerve, too, Rabbit. I'd enjoy beating you to pieces for trying it. On your way, punk. Rabbit shuffled out of the bat's cave with a slow, heavy step, like a man reluctant to step out into the sunlight. I spent the next hour checking contacts of my own, then returned to the bat's cave and waited for Rabbit. He came in a half an hour late, took the stool beside me, and ordered a beer before he turned to me.
Oh, you picked some tough guys to get a line on, Diamond. Oh, I had a bad time.
Stop singing the blues, Rabbit.
Yeah, and if the guy has worked the rackets, he's been quiet about it. I couldn't find one guy who knew him.
You sure of that, Rabbit?
Oh, sure, I'm sure. I did find a few guys who'd heard of him, though.
Keep talking.
Now, two different guys were at Squeaky Horner's floating crap game the other night. And they say a guy named Lewis Dixon was there.
How did they know it was Dixon?
Well, we was flashing dough around, telling everyone what a big shot he was.
But they don't know where he is now.
Well, if they did, I'd tell you. Maybe Squeaky Horner knows. He ran the game.
Well, where's Squeaky now?
When the game folds for a few days, Squeaky hangs out around a penny arcade at 3rd and Chestnut.
I know the place.
Well, then go and talk to him. And let me drink my beer in peace.
I passed a few more insults with Rabbit as I paid a check, then drove to the penny arcade, 3rd and Chestnut. Squeaky Horner was hunched over a pinball machine, and when he saw me, his eyes lit up like the tilt sign.
Ricky Diamond, hey. How you been, Rick?
No, not bad, Squeaky. You?
Great, great. Hey, look at that score. Got a nickel?
Oh, sure, yeah.
Thanks. What brings you down here, Ricky?
I understand a guy named Lois Dixon was at your game a few nights ago.
Hey, Rick, there's a lot of boys drop in from time to time. It's hard. You say Dixon?
That's right.
Yeah, I remember him, a blowhard. Every time he rolled a dice, he said, Lewis Dixon's the best crap shooter in town. Prove it, Dice. That's what he said.
You ever seen him before, Squeaky?
Let me see. No, he was a stranger. I got a good memory for faces. This boy I never seen before.
Oh, great. Was he with anyone you might know?
I'm afraid not, Rick. He come alone and he left alone. Wish I could help you, though.
Thanks, anyway.
Thank you for the nickel. Man, hey, look at that score go up!
Squeaky's score was running very high, but mine was still zero. So far, not one definite lead as to the whereabouts of Lewis Dixon. I spent another half hour combing the known informers, but to no avail. A little after five, I went to a phone booth and called my client, Fred Lane.
Hello?
Mr. Lane?
Who's this?
Richard Diamond.
It's Walt, Rick.
Walt, what are you doing there?
Can't you guess?
Oh, no.
Fred Lane, your client, Rick?
Yeah.
Better get over here right away. You are now unemployed.
Lane?
That's right. Murdered.
Before we continue with Richard Diamond, here is an important question.
How mild,
how mild,
how mild,
how mild,
how mild can a cigarette be?
How mild can a cigarette be? Here's a good way to find out. Make the 30-day Camel Mildness Test a sensible test based on steady smoking. Smoke only Camels for the next 30 days and compare them in your T-zone. T for throat, T for taste. See how much you enjoy Camel's rich, full flavor, pack after pack, as your steady smoke. See how well Camels agree with your throat, week after week, as your steady smoke. You'll soon see why. Camel is America's most popular cigarette by billions of cigarettes per year. Yes, and you'll soon be a steady Camel smoker.
How mild,
how mild,
how mild,
how mild,
how mild can a cigarette be? Make the Camel 30-day test and you'll see.
Smoke Camels and see.
And now, back to Richard Diamond, Private Detective, starring Dick Powell.
Fred Lane's body lay on the floor of his den. There was a letter opener lying beside the body, and it fit the hole in his back. Tomorrow morning's paper would carry Fred Lane's obituary. It would tell where he was born, what he did with his life, and when he died. But it wouldn't tell who killed him. And that's what I wanted to find out.
Looks like you really put up a fight, Eric.
Yeah, the room's torn up a lot. Who did it, Walt?
Louis Dixon, the guy you've been out looking for.
Do you have him?
Uh-uh. Mrs. Lane gave us the information. Seems Dixon came here to the house about 2 hours ago. He wanted more dough for Mrs. Lane.
Pretty nervy to come right here.
Yeah. Guess she figured Lane might be out. Anyway, Mrs. Lane called her husband. Fred came in, invited Dixon into the den for a talk, and sent Mrs. Lane upstairs.
Oh, well, that fits. Lane starts beating up Dixon. Dixon grabs a letter opener and kills Lane.
That's where it figures. Mrs. Lane said she heard the struggle, but her husband had told her to stay in her room, and then she heard Dixon run out, so she came down and found the body and called us.
Mm. Did you get the prints off the letter opener?
Nope. Mrs. Lane said Dixon was wearing a pair of gloves when he came in. Chances are he never took them off.
Hmm. Oh, that's great. Well, Fatty, I hope you have more luck picking up Dixon than I had. Nobody around town seems to know him.
Well, Mrs. Lane gave us a good description. I put out an APB. What about you? You still on the case?
I was about to give it up when I phoned. But I can keep going as long as my legs hold up.
Good. I'd like to nab this Dixon guy as quick as possible.
Me too, Walt. I don't like people to go around killing my clients. Just isn't good for business. The boys were taking a body down to the morgue as I left. It looked like a hard day for my shoe leather. The only thing I could do was keep pounding the pavement in search of someone who knew or had known Louis Dixon. Cigarette stands, boogie joints, cheap boarding houses, nothing. Down to the Bowery, missions, small bars, guys on the corners.
Louis Dixon?
Yeah, never heard of him.
And so it went. I headed back for my office in the comfort that comes when you sit in a chair with your feet on the desk. But when I reached the entrance of the office building, Squeaky Horner was standing there waiting for me.
Hey, Ricky, where you been? I've been waiting here a long time, almost an hour.
Oh, what's on your mind, Squeaky?
You still looking for Louis Dixon?
That's a silly question. Why?
Because I seen him about an hour and a half ago.
Are you sure?
Sure, I'm sure. I got a good memory for faces. After I leave the arcade, I'm walking up Third and I see him. Big as life.
Where is he now?
I tell him, see? He goes into Henry's flop house. He's staying in one of Henry's rooms. Not in a hall like most of the guys. He's under another name.
What name, Squeaky?
Jack Lighton. You want I should take you to the place, Ricky?
Yeah, Squeaky. I want this, you should.
Here's the room, Ricky. You want I should knock?
Never mind.
What?
Just hold it right there, Layton. Or is it Dixon?
What are you talking about? What's the idea of busting in here like this?
What about it, Squeaky? Is he the guy?
No doubt about it, Ricky. He's the same guy who was at the game a few nights ago.
What game are you talking about? I never seen you before in my life.
All right, Squeaky. I can take it from here. Thanks a lot.
Anytime, Ricky.
Hey. Hey, what gives anyway, bud?
Suppose you tell me, Dixon.
Why do you keep calling me Dixon? The name's Jack Layton.
Well, we'll see about that. There's one person who should be able to identify you for sure. Fred Lane's widow. Get your hat, pal. Well, it looked like the end of a hard day. I forced Layton, or Dixon, outside and into my car. Then we drove to the Lane house on Riverside. The police had left and Mrs. Lane was alone. I took my man inside and Mrs. Lane looked at him closely. I knew it would be just like the movies. She'd point and say, "That's him. That's the man, Mr. Diamond."
"I'm sorry, Mr. Diamond."
"What?"
"I've never seen this man before in my life."
This, dear children, is the story of why a detective gets ulcers. But as I was driving Layton back toward town, I began thinking. Squeaky Horner had never been wrong about a man before. And why had Dixon been so hard to locate? I hadn't been able to turn up one man who knew him. So instead of driving Layton back to his room, I drove to the Brewster Hotel, where Lane said Dixon had been registered for a week. There it was a different story. The desk clerk positively identified Jack Layton as the man who had registered as Louis Dixon. At last, things began to shape up.
"Mr.
Why did you bring me here to your office? I want to get back to my room.
You heard what the desk clerk said. You registered as Louis Dixon. Why?
Oh, that desk clerk was loony. He made a mistake. You heard what Mrs. Lane said. She never saw me before.
So she said. But I think differently, Layton. And up here all alone, we can have a nice little chat. You're going to tell me all about it.
I got nothing to say.
No? Well, then suppose I open the conversation. Now, that was the first sentence, Layton. Now, do I start on a paragraph, or will you talk instead?
I don't know a thing.
Okay, stupid. We'll do it the hard way.
Yes? Oh, Mr. Diamond.
Hello, Mrs. Lane. Mind if I come in?
Of course not. Please do.
Suppose we go into the den. I'd like to have a little talk with you, Mrs. Lane.
Well, I'm sorry. I'm not feeling too well, Mr. Diamond. The shock and all.
Oh, yes, yes, of course. It must have been trying, my bringing that Layton man here for you to identify.
Well, yes, it was. If you could come back tomorrow, perhaps...
Oh, I'm afraid not, honey. Now.
Very well. I'm sorry you picked up the wrong man, Mr. Diamond.
Oh, sure, yes. That's funny. Two other people swore he was the man known as Louis Dixon.
Well, it's hard to identify someone accurately, I imagine. But I was certain he wasn't Dixon.
Mm-hmm. Well, you've tidied up the den quite a bit.
Just what is it you wanted to talk to me about, Mr. Diamond?
Well, there's no hurry. Say, this is a handsome room. Nice house, too. And all yours, along with everything else your husband owned.
That's rather a cruel thing to say.
Oh, come off it, Mary. It was a wild scheme.
What do you mean?
I mean that you invented a phony character, a Louis Dixon, and set up a murder with every clue pointing to a man who never existed.
You're crazy.
No, Mary. You were crazy to think a stunt like this would ever work. You hired a bum named Jack Layton, gave him money, had him register at the Brewster Hotel as Louis Dixon. Then you had him hit some of the gambling joints and make sure people heard his name as Louis Dixon. Then he was to disappear.
I won't stay here and be insulted.
No? Well, soon I'll take it down to headquarters. You can be insulted there.
Well, I hope you have proof, Mr. Diamond. You'll need it.
Well, Layton was reluctant at first, but let's say I persuaded him to talk. I dropped him by the 5th precinct on my way over here.
How much do you make as a private detective, Mr. Diamond?
Oh, Mary, don't talk like that. First chance you got, you'd stick a knife in my back, too.
Well, it was just a suggestion. After all...
No. Drop it now. Well. First a letter opener on your husband, and now you try to bean me with a paperweight. Honey, you're just not safe around a desk, are you?
Rick?
Yes, Helen, dear?
I've been thinking.
Show off.
No, really. I think you should put your business on a more dignified level.
You don't say.
You should try and attract a higher type clientele.
Oh, I don't know. This Lane fellow I work for today was no slouch.
But what happened to him? He got killed. That's the trouble with your cases. They're too dangerous. If you don't get into trouble, your clients do.
True.
You should concentrate on more simple cases for wealthy clients, like divorce cases and inheritance claims.
Oh, great. Maybe I should even carry a Potter puff in my shoulder holster.
All right, so it wouldn't be as exciting. Get the same fee and you wouldn't get so many black eyes.
Then I couldn't come here to you for sympathy, dear.
Rick, I'm serious.
Okay, honey, okay. Now tell me, just how do I go about attracting a higher type clientele, as you put it?
Well, you start off by putting on a more pretentious front.
Meaning I eat more?
Meaning you act a little more dignified.
Well, do go on, Miss Asher.
You should also have someone at the office to answer the phone for you.
Oh, Helen, it only rings once or twice a day. I think I have enough strength to pick up the receiver that often.
Well, it's strictly for appearances.
Oh, I see. Anyone in mind for the job?
Well, I have a lot of free time.
Well, fine, dear, fine. I'm glad it's free. I should be able to afford that.
And then after we build up the business... Rick, are you listening?
Oh, sure, baby, sure.
You are not. You're just waiting for me to take a pause so you can sneak in a song.
Oh, honey, how can you be so suspicious? But, since you did bring up the matter,
I should have known better.
Oh, live and learn, dear, live and learn. If they ask me, I could write a book about the way you walk and whisper and look. I could write a preface on how we met, so the world would never forget. And the simple secret of the plot is just to tell them that I love you a lot. Then the world discovers, as my book ends, how to make two lovers of friends. Then the world discovers, as my book ends, how to make two lovers of friends.
Oh, very nice.
Well, thank you, sweet.
Only now let's get back to your business.
Oh, who wants to talk about business? Come here.
Now, Rick, stop it. Rick, I wanted to... Oh, Rick.
Oh, now then. You were saying I shouldn't get on a more dignified level.
I was?
Oh, that's what I like. A gal with a one-track mind.
Dick Powell will return in just a moment. What's America's most popular cigarette? Camel is in the lead by billions of cigarettes per year. One reason is that America's smokers have found out how rich, how flavorful Camels are, pack after pack. Another reason is that America's smokers have discovered how well Camels agree with their throats week after week. Are you smoking the cigarette America enjoys most? If not, start smoking mild, flavorful Camels tonight.
How mild can a cigarette be? Make the Camel 30-day test and you'll see. Smoke Camels and see.
Here's Dick Powell with a special message.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, as a token of friendship and to help show hospitalized veterans and service personnel that America remembers them, the makers of Camels send thousands of packs of Camels to service and veterans' hospitals every week. This week, the gift Camels are going to Veterans Hospitals, Minneapolis, Minnesota, and Bay Pines, Florida, U.S. Naval Hospital, Memphis, Tennessee, to all hospitals operated by the Alaskan Air Command. Now, until next week, enjoy Camels. I always do.
Tonight's adventure of Richard Diamond was written by Dick Carr with music by Frank Worth. Virginia Gregg was heard as Helen Asher and Alan Reed as Lieutenant Walt Levinson. Others in the cast were Benny Rubin, Mary Jane Croft, Howard McNear, and Peter Leeds. Richard Diamond, Private Detective, is transcribed in Hollywood by Jaime Del Valle. Be sure to listen to another great Camel show, Vaughn Monroe and the Camel Caravan, every Saturday night. Listen next week for another exciting adventure of Richard Diamond, starring Dick Powell.
Now stay tuned for This Is Your FBI, followed immediately by Ozzie and Harriet over most of these stations.
Personal notice. Danger's my stock and trade. If the job's too tough for you to handle, you've got a job for me, George Valentine. Write full details.
Standard Oil Company of California invites you to Let George Do It. For the kind of driving you do where you do it, your engine needs a gasoline with many different performance qualities. That's why Chevron Supreme gasoline was designed to give you not one, not two, but all eight high-performance qualities. Starting, warm-up, acceleration, anti-knock, vapor-lock prevention, mileage, power, and area blending. They're all yours in every gallon of Chevron Supreme gasoline at standard stations and independent Chevron gas stations where they say and mean, we take better care of your car. No Way Out, another adventure of George Valentine.
Dear Mr. Valentine, I guess I need your help as much as anybody ever did. I'm scared. I'm in something up to my neck, and I want to get out of it. But if I do, I'll be killed. And if I don't, I'll probably be arrested. I live at 1003 Ransom Place, but don't come there. Please meet me in Morgan Park tomorrow noon. I'll be sitting on the third bench inside the Rand Street entrance. And please don't act as though you knew me, or something bad might happen to both of us. Yours truly, Larry Baker.
Third bench. Oh, there he is, George.
Yeah, must be our boy, all right, Brooksy. Let's park on the other end of the bench.
Okay.
Hello.
Hi.
Mind if we sit down here?
Oh, help yourself.
Thanks, Larry.
That's all right. Oh. You're George Valentine?
Yeah, that's right. This is Miss Brooks.
Don't look like you're talking to me. Act like you're talking to her.
Brother, you are scared. Okay. Brooksy, I'd just like to know what this is all about.
I think Larry's going to tell us, George.
Yeah, but I got to make it fast.
All right, make it fast, but start from the beginning.
I will. I was working in a lunchroom, short order cook, making $42.50 a week.
Yeah, go on.
A man who'd been coming in once in a while talked to me one day. Said he was opening up a dry cleaning place. And how would I like to manage it?
That sounds like a good break, doesn't it, George?
At $200 a week.
Wow, I'll say it's a good break.
Keep looking at your girl. I don't know who's watching. If they knew I told anybody, they'd kill me.
Okay. Brooksy, I wonder why they'd want to kill Larry.
I'll tell you. A couple of weeks after I took the job, a fella came in. He said that every few days a man would leave a package at the shop. I was to hide it overnight. And the next day, another man would be in to pick it up.
George, that store must be a front of some kind.
That's what I mean. And the man told me if I said anything to anybody about it, the boss would see to it that I'd be bumped off so fast I wouldn't know what... Wait a minute.
What's the trouble?
That guy walking up this way. Hold it. Make love to your girl. Act like you're engaged or something.
Well, this is an opportunity I didn't expect. Put your arms around me, George, darling.
Okay. Look, Angel, what's wrong with Santa Barbara for our honeymoon? I know a nice little place.
All right, Bunny. I'll go anywhere you want to go. Because any place would be wonderful for a honeymoon as long as I'm with you, Bunny.
Gosh, that's well of you, Angel. You're wonderful. Bunny yet. Couldn't you think of any other name to call me?
We'll talk about the honeymoon later. He's gone, Larry.
Yeah, I know.
All right, then. Let's have the rest of it. Have you been getting these packages?
Not yet, Mr. Valentine. Another man came in yesterday and said the first one would be delivered to me this afternoon at 4 o'clock. That's why I wrote to you.
Uh-huh. Well, we'd better be there to see what your man looks like. What's the address of your shop, Larry?
It's 119 Murray Street. But look, you can't be in the shop. They'd suspect something.
We won't come in. We'll look on from across the street.
Mr. Valentine, I know this is something crooked, And if the police get onto it, I'll be arrested. I tried to quit, but they wouldn't let me. There's no way out. This man said I'd have to do what they tell me to, or...
Just take it easy, Larry. We'll try and find your way out.
Larry, I'm sorry I'm late for your sandwiches, darling.
That's all right, baby. I got another half hour before I have to go back and open up the shop. Sit down.
Okay, darling. Oh, Larry, what's the matter?
Don't look now, baby. But the people on the other end of the bench are Mr. Valentine and Miss Brooks.
Oh, you told them?
Yeah. I guess they're going to try to help us.
Oh,
don't you look either, Mr. Valentine. This is my wife, Sally.
I saw her coming up the path, George. She's sweet.
He's okay himself, Angel. Yeah, I think we'd better be across the street from Larry's shop at 4 o'clock.
George.
Yeah, Brooksy.
Just how long do you think we can sit here in your car in a loading zone without getting a ticket?
Just where do you think is a better place to watch what goes on over there in Larry's cleaning shop? Besides, if we get a ticket, Johnson will fix it.
What's Lieutenant Johnson got to do with this case?
Nothing yet. But I've got a notion that if we can't find some way to help Larry out of his mess, Johnson will have something to do with it.
Oh, Larry seems like such a nice boy. I hope
not. Wait a minute, Brooksy.
What?
That big black sedan that just pulled up in front of the shop.
Oh. Man getting out with some suits to be cleaned. Oh, but that wouldn't be a package. Larry.
Angel, does anyone have to carry a package in plain sight to prove he's got one?
Oh, I see what you mean. He's gone in.
Yeah, what time is it?
It's 4:05.
Uh-huh.
George, what are you writing?
License number of that car. I suspect anyone who goes in there.
But, darling, it's a big car. The man's wearing a chauffeur's uniform. Probably someone just sent him in
with some suits to be cleaned, yeah. That could be a good cover-up if this is a hot racket.
What could it be? Narcotics?
Narcotics, smuggled stuff, plain payoff. Who knows?
He's coming out again, George.
Yeah. That didn't take long.
Well, he was certainly in a hurry.
That's right. Come on, let's get across the shop.
George, the suit you brought.
Hmm? Oh, yeah. We've got our cover up, too, haven't we? Let's go.
There's Larry behind the counter. He's
looking just as if he'd seen a ghost. That must have been our man, all right. Hello.
Oh, hello.
Got a suit here to be cleaned. Was that it, Larry?
Yeah.
Did he bring the package?
Yeah.
Well, come on, let's see it.
No. Look, Mr. Valentine, I know you're trying to help me, but I got to think about Sally. If anything goes wrong...
All right, all right. What kind of a package was it?
A big envelope. I don't know what's in it. I'm going to do just like they said, because if anything happens...
I know what you mean. So we'll try it the hard way. What about this man who hired you to run the place?
I don't know anything about him.
Well, he must come in and give you your salary, doesn't he?
No. He sends it to me in the mail.
Uh-huh. What's his name, Larry?
It's Hilton. Sam Hilton. That's what he told me.
Where does he live?
Haven't you got one of the envelopes your pay came in?
Yeah. Yeah, I got one in my pocket.
Well, come on, let's see it.
Oh, I hope nobody catches me showing it to you.
Nobody will. Let's have it.
Well, okay. Here.
Here's a return address, George. Number 6, Berwick Towers.
Uh-huh. Swanky address, all right. Put that down someplace, Angel.
Yeah, I'll get it.
Mr. Valentine, what are you going to do?
Drop in at Berwick Towers?
But don't tell him I said anything.
All right, Larry. Go ahead and do just what you were told to do, and I'll see you tomorrow. Tonight, I'm going to pay a little visit to your boss.
George, Mr. Hilton isn't home, and I'm glad.
Yeah, Angel, why?
Because I don't know what you could say to him if he were in. Anyway, why did we have to come tonight?
Oh, I don't know. Just a social call.
George!
Yeah. A man who doesn't lock his door deserves visitors. And with my curiosity...
George, we're not going in there.
No, we're not. You're going to stay out here in the hall and stand watch for me.
Darling, sometimes I think your curiosity...
Call out if the enemy approaches, sentry.
Please be careful.
Now, where's the light switch? Right there. Ah, here we are. Well, nice room. And a nice big desk. Might be just full of information. Uh-huh. Memo. The boss says to stay out of sight until... Hey. Hey, Brooksy. Why'd you turn off that light? I can't see...
I didn't turn it off, George. I'm out here in the hall the way you told me.
Hey!
Thank you.
Just like the girl that called me Bunny this afternoon.
Oh, stop. That was because...
And according to the grammar I studied, you don't say it's me, you say it's I.
George, at a time like this, are you all right, darling?
Oh, sure, Dandy, just fine. Both of my heads are just fine. What happened?
I don't know. I heard you ask me if I turned the lights off, and I said I didn't. Then I heard a kind of a hollow thud.
Yeah, that was on the one head I had then, Angel. Didn't you see anybody?
No, but I heard somebody. It was dark when I came in the room, but I heard somebody running and a window slammed.
Window?
And then
Yeah, window. That one. Probably leads out to the fire escape.
You think Hilton was here all the time, George?
I don't think Yehudi hit me. And I also think the man who hired Larry Baker isn't just playing good stuff.
So?
So? I'm going to get back to Larry and Sally. Tell them what they're up against.
Of course, that's a good idea. Tomorrow morning.
Tomorrow morning?
Yes, darling. Or rather, this morning. It's after 1 o'clock now, and the Bakers would be asleep. And besides, I'm a little tired of holding this handkerchief on your head. It'll only need about 4 stitches.
Okay, you win, Angel. But first thing in the morning, I've got to see the Bakers. Because whoever Larry's mixed up with is playing for keeps.
Just a minute.
What are you... Oh, Mr. Valentine. Miss Brooks.
Hello, Sally. May we come in?
Wait, yes, but I... Don't mind the bandage on Mr. Valentine's head, Sally. Last night he got into a little accident.
Oh.
Has Larry left for work yet?
Sally, what's the matter? What's happened?
Larry's in jail.
In jail? Why?
The police just called me a few minutes ago. A man was shot in the store and they say Larry did it. Oh, please, Mr. Valentine, can't you help us? I don't know what to do.
All right, Sally, all right. At this point, I don't quite know what to do either. But I told you both yesterday that I'd help you, and I will. Come on, Brooksy, we got to get down to police headquarters.
Return to tonight's adventure of George Valentine in just a moment. When you're driving out on the highways this month, you're likely to see an outdoor poster that says, "Battery down? We charge them up." And that's Car Saver's way of reminding you, during the month of October, that for fast, efficient battery service, your independent Chevron gas station or standard station is the place to go. If your battery needs a boost, Car Savers are the people to see. Or if your battery has seen better days and just won't take a charge anymore, then Car Savers are the people to see about a brand new Atlas battery. Atlas is the battery that's packed with power to give you good, fast starting and also supply power for your radio, heater, or other accessories. Atlas batteries are backed by a written warranty that's honored by 38,000 Atlas dealers from coast to coast. And if you're budget-minded like most of us, you'll be glad to know that you can take several months to pay. So next time you're out on the highways enjoying a ride in the country or just taking a short trip in your own neighborhood, look for the Car Saver sign that says, "Battery down? We charge them up." That's your reminder that for all types of battery service, whether your battery needs a drink of water, a speedy recharge, or even if you need a brand new Atlas battery, the place to go is your independent Chevron gas station or standard station. The people you'll see are Car Savers, the folks who say and mean we take better care of your car. Now, back to tonight's adventure of George Valentine. A very frightened young man sends for you because he suddenly found himself right in the middle of some kind of racket. With almost nothing to go on, you set out to help him. Just when you found out that the people he's mixed up with are really playing a rough game, the young man himself is taken to jail for shooting. But if your name is George Valentine, you'd like to talk to your client and find out just what he has to say about it.
I didn't shoot him, Mr. Valentine. You got to believe that.
I didn't say you did, Larry. But if I'm going to help you, I've got to know what you know. Now, who did shoot him?
How can I tell you that? I wasn't there.
All right, now just calm down and tell me what happened.
Well, I went in to open up the shop at 8 o'clock like I'm supposed to. When I opened the door, there he was, lying on the floor, groaning and mumbling something about getting a doctor.
What did you do?
I knew he must be hurt bad. And I knew the fastest way to get an ambulance was to call the police, so that's what I did.
I see. Did you know who this man was, Larry?
No. Well, I mean, I don't even know what he looked like. He was lying face down on the floor. There was blood all around him. I don't think you're supposed to touch anybody like that until the police come.
The police will find out who he is anyway. Oh, by the way, what about the package you got from that chauffeur yesterday? Was that gone when you got to the shop?
I had it.
You... What?
I was so scared. I thought if I left it in the shop, it might be stolen. I'd be blamed. So I took it home last night and kept it under my pillow. I had it with me when I went in this morning.
Yeah? Where is it now?
Well, it's...
Look, Larry, I know you're frightened about everything. You thought the police might tie up with that, too. But you'd better tell me.
Well, before the police came, I hid the envelope under the rug in the shop near the big chair.
Uh-huh. Okay, good. First thing I'll do is try to get you out of here. Just take it easy.
I don't want to get out now, Mr. Valentine.
Why not?
Well, I'm pretty safe here. But if I get out, they'll be after me. I know they will, and I...
Valentine.
Huh? Oh, Lieutenant Johnson.
We've had time enough for the kid. Come on out. I want to talk to you.
Okay. Take it easy, Larry. I'll be back.
Thanks, Mr. Valentine.
All right, Valentine, come on. The kid confess?
Confess? To what?
Oh, look, Valentine, I've got a job to do.
So have I. Did you locate the Sam Hilton that Baker was working for?
No, disappeared. No trace of him.
Find the gun that shot was fired from?
No, but we will. This Baker had plenty of time to hide it someplace before our men got there.
This Baker didn't hide it any place, Johnson, because he didn't do the shooting.
Oh, no?
Oh, no. Got an ident on the guy who was shot yet?
Sure, from his fingerprints. Joe McMath, small town hood around town. Couple of arrests.
Yeah, that makes sense. You don't mind if we stop in the receiving hospital and have a look at him, do you?
For what? Look, Valentine. You know something you're not telling.
Sure I do, Johnson. I know a kid is being framed, and you're helping to do it. Now, wait till I pick up Brooksy, and then we'll get over to the hospital and have a look at your victim.
Oh, nurse.
Yes? Oh, Lieutenant Johnson.
This the room you've got McMath in?
Yes, that's right.
He conscious yet?
Not yet, sir. He's had a sedative.
What'd the doc say? Will he live?
Oh, yes, he's going to be all right. Bad wound in the shoulder, but he's out of danger.
Thanks. Well, you two wanted to see the victim step in. Though I can't for the life of me see why...
Thanks, Lieutenant. You're so obliging. Come on in, Brooksy.
But, George,
I don't care for hospitals either, Angel.
Just wanted to prove the man your client shot's still alive, I suppose. Valentine,
hey,
I...
Brooksy.
Yes. I know what you mean, George.
Hey, wait a minute. What?
That hospital nightie isn't quite like a chauffeur's uniform. But you couldn't mistake that face. Hey, Johnson.
Look, what are you getting at?
Oh, somehow we connect that face with a big black sedan. Wait a minute. Yeah, here it is. Would you mind finding out the registration on this license number?
Huh? No, look, I'm not the motor vehicle bureau.
No, but you might possibly get to be an inspector before you retire for having a wonderful brain. Just check with me at the office when you get the information.
That must... I'll get it, George.
Okay, Angel.
Hello, George Valentine's office. If the job's tough for you to handle...
Oh, Miss Brooks, will you stop that foolish chatter?
Lieutenant Johnson.
Yeah, let me talk to Valentine.
He's busy right now. May I take the message?
All right. That license number your boss wanted traced.
Yes?
The car's registered to Mike Lazzetti.
Mike Lazzetti?
Big Mike Lazzetti? Hey, Angel, give me that phone. Hello, Johnson.
Yeah? I thought you were busy.
I'm going to be in just a few minutes. And, Lieutenant, maybe you will get to be an inspector.
George, Mike Lazzetti, the big gangster, he owns the car that brought the package to Larry's shop.
That's right, Angel.
So it is a racket.
Right, a big racket. And you can cross off the narcotics and smuggling. That character is strictly a numbers racket, man.
George, where are you going?
Brooksy, I got an idea. I've just discovered that Larry's boss isn't this Sam Hilton at all. So, I'm going to a little office back of a large pool room and see his real boss, Big Mike Lazzetti.
Come in.
Thanks.
Yeah. Who are you? What do you want?
Well, you see, I'm new in town, Mike. I just come in from Detroit a couple of weeks ago. Name's Gray.
So?
Well, just trying to make a few connections out here, Mike. All of a sudden, I find I'm in a position to do you a little favor. I hope you'll remember me for it.
Anybody does Big Mike a favor gets remembered. What is it?
Well, I guess you heard about a friend of yours getting plugged this morning, Mike. A guy named Joe McMahon.
Yeah, I heard about it. Too bad. Good guy.
Oh, no, never met him. But I guess you know the cops are holding a young guy named Larry Baker for the shooting.
Yeah? What's it got to do with me? Say, who are you, anyway?
I happen to know one of your boys, Sam Hilton.
Yeah?
Yeah. I figured I'd tell Sam about this first, but I couldn't locate him. So I thought I'd better get to you fast.
Well, come on, what is it?
I still get that favor?
Yeah, sure.
Okay. The Baker kid says he didn't shoot McMath, and the cops can't prove it he did. But he claims something was dropped in the store this morning that'll prove who did.
Huh? Look, friend, you say you want a favor from Big Mike, but you tell me nothing. What you say is nothing.
Yeah? Suppose this Baker punk says one of your boys did it.
Then he's crazy.
Sure. He's crazy as long as he's in jail. But suppose he wasn't in jail.
Wasn't he? You mean he's out?
Not yet, Mike, not yet. But the cops can't get anything on him. They're letting him go. I listen around. I hear stuff, see? I understand he told the cops he'll bring him something that'll pin the rap on somebody.
Yeah? He's not out yet, huh?
Not yet. The way I get it, they're springing him at 2 o'clock this afternoon. I kind of got an idea he might go back to the shop to get that evidence.
Yeah. Yeah, he might do that.
Yeah. Well, I just thought you might like to know, Mike. I'll come back later for that favor. And don't forget, boss, the name's Gray.
Yeah, fella. Come back in a couple of days. I'll do you a favor.
Thanks.
George, you're all right.
Step on it, Brooksy. Get down to headquarters as fast as you can. I've got to make a deal with Lieutenant Johnson.
Valentine, you're mad, and I'm mad to even consider it.
All right, Johnson, all right. Now, let me ask you this. Have you got any evidence that Larry Baker shot McMahon?
Well, no, not yet. But we will. We can hold him for 72 hours on suspicion.
Of assault with intent to... Yeah, I know. But how'd you like to get the guy who really did the shooting, Johnson, and clean out a big racket at the same time?
Well, sure, I... How? You think it'll work?
I don't know, Inspector.
Lieutenant.
Oh, sorry, just looking in my crystal ball, boy. You see, I'm going on the theory that a big crook can't afford to leave himself in a bad spot. How about it, huh?
Oh, I suppose so. Here's Baker's cell.
Good. Hi, Larry.
Hi, Mr. Valentine.
Come on, they're letting you out of here.
That's right. Come on, son.
But look, Mr. Valentine, I don't want to get out now. I told you.
I know what you told me, Larry. But you're getting out anyway. You're going to leave here at just 2 o'clock. And at 2:15, you're going to be back in your shop.
I don't want to go out. Please, can't you understand? I know what they'll do to me.
Just a minute. Valentine, you've been hiding something. Who are they?
I didn't have any idea until a few minutes ago, Johnson, but I think I do now. And you can't play it any other way. Now, look, Larry, you asked me to help you out of a spot.
Yes, sure, I did, but I...
You won't get hurt. Nothing will happen to you. Just go back to your shop.
Okay, Mr. Valentine. I'll go back to the shop if you say so. But I'm just hoping I'll be around to tell about it tomorrow. Hello? Yeah, that's right. Well, no, I'm sorry. We're not open today. No, I don't know if we'll be open tomorrow either. No, I'm sorry.
Who are you talking to? Hang up that phone.
Yes, sir.
All right, give it to me.
Give you what? I don't know what you mean. We're not open. There isn't any money.
I don't mean money. You know what I mean. Listen, punk, You came back here to get something you were going to turn over to the cops. I want it. And don't forget you're talking to the boss.
Boss? I don't understand.
Look, don't play dumb because you ain't. Hilton said you was a smart kid. You know what happened to McMath, don't you?
Yeah, but...
Sure you do. I took care of him because he was holding out on me. I brought him in here this morning before you opened the shop so as I could get the payoff, though. But it wasn't here. He didn't leave it like you said he did. He double-crossed me. You see what happens to people that cross Big Mike?
You mean you're the...
Shut up. Now, what did I drop in here this morning? What did you find? Give it to me.
But I haven't got anything yet.
Oh, yeah? Well, maybe this'll convince you. Now... Come on, hand it over.
Suppose you hand over that gun, Mike. Huh? No tricks, you're covered.
But this is a trap.
You're right, Mike, it is a trap. And you've already done me that little favor. I'll take the gun.
But you said you was from Detroit.
Yeah, I know, a little white lie. And the name's Valentine, not Gray. Here you are, Johnson. One shot fired from his gun. And I think the boys in ballistics can tie it up with a bullet that came out of McMath, don't you?
All right. So a guy attacked me and I winged him. Self-defense. They can't send me up for that.
Oh, yes, they can, Mike, when McMath talks. Thing called assault with intent to commit murder.
Oh, and that payoff envelope you thought McMath stole, Mike. Young Larry here hid it under a rug. It's full of names, including yours.
So you see, Busty, you don't have to do me a favor. You're going to do everybody a favor by going out for a good long stretch.
Mr. Valentine, you mean I'm out of this?
That's right, Larry.
Oh, that's great. Except I'm also out of a job. I don't know how to tell Sally.
Well, don't tell her yet. I've got an idea kicking around in the back of my head that, Well, look, Larry, meet me tomorrow noon on that same bench in Morgan Park, huh?
Sure, okay, Mr. Valentine. I'll be there.
Compared with premium-type motor oils, as designated by the American Petroleum Institute, new RPM motor oil doubles engine life between major overhauls due to lubrication. Your car needs that kind of protection, for new RPM cuts in half the wear rate of critical engine parts. Get new RPM for your car at independent Chevron gas stations or standard stations where they say and mean, we take better care of your car.
Mr. Valentine, you mean... I'm going to get to be a cop.
That's right, Larry. At least Lieutenant Johnson has made arrangements for you to go to police school and start out as a rookie. The rest is up to you.
Oh, boy, you don't have to worry about the rest, Mr. Valentine.
I know I don't. Now, suppose you go on home and tell Sally.
I sure will. Thanks for everything. Bye, Miss Brooks.
Bye, Larry. Good luck. George.
Yeah, Angel.
Do you realize this is the same park bench we were sitting on when we first talked to Larry Baker?
Hmm? Oh, yeah, sure.
George.
Hmm? What?
Here comes that same man.
Where? Oh, no. Look, that's not the same
guy. It is too, George. Quick, put your arms around me.
All right, but it's so silly.
Oh, Bunny. I thought we'd have to wait until next year to go on our honeymoon. But I think this is wonderful. Yes, Bunny. I will marry you tomorrow.
Oh, brother, how crafty can you get? come on, Angel. Let's go get some lunch.
Tonight's adventure of George Valentine has been brought to you by Standard Oil Company of California on behalf of independent Chevron gas stations and standard stations throughout the West. Robert Bailey is starred as George with Virginia Gregg as Brooksy. Let George Do It was written by Don Clark and directed by Kenneth Webb. Ken Christie was heard as Lieutenant Johnson, Jonathan Hole as Larry, Louise Arthur as Sally, and Ted DeCorsia as Mike. The music is composed and presented by Eddie Dunstetter. Your announcer, John Heaston. Listen again next week, same time, same station, to Let George Do It. Let George Do It is heard overseas through the worldwide facilities of the Armed Forces Radio Service. This is the Mutual Don Lee Broadcasting System.
That's Case Closed for this week. I'll be back next Wednesday with another hour of crime stories. But between now and then, if you want to hear more from Richard Diamond, Let George Do It, a variety of other types of detective shows, and old-time radio in general, just visit RelicRadio.com. You'll find the podcasts listed right on the front page. Links to everything else, Relic Radio, and our donate button if you'd like to help support this and all the shows. Thanks to those who have. Thanks for joining me today. Talk to you again next Wednesday with another episode of Case Closed. Case Closed is produced by and for RelicRadio.com. Rebroadcast of this show without permission is strictly prohibited.